Hi, dear Get More listeners. Today we have Rhonda Taylor with us. So I hope I pronounce it well with the nice insistence on the R. So
Perfect.
Rhonda, welcome and tell us, who are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. That is a loaded question. Who am I? So, I have been in the recruiting field for 20 years. Began my career back in 2003. I guess I'm going on 21 years now.
Sounds like that.
I began my career in recruiting and have really sort of continued in that vein throughout the years. But what I'll say is over the last 10 years, have really built out multiple startups in the recruiting world and really heavily focused on executive search. So I'd say over the last like 7, 8 years is where I've began to prioritize my career towards executive search. So what that means is leadership, really focused at the director level and above, more so than your individual contributors, or middle management. And where I am today, I've actually moved out of the startup world after spending 10 years in it. I work for Boyden. Boyden has been around since 1946, and we have 70 offices in more than 45 countries. We are somewhat industry agnostic. We have 6 practice areas that are dedicated to each and every industry. So we have industrial, we have social impact, we have healthcare, finance, consumer, and technology. Where I've spent the majority of my career in the search world has been focused on consumer and technology businesses with a little bit of social impact in higher ed. The great thing about Boyden is when I work with potential clients or candidates, if I'm not the expert in that space, there is an expert here that is in that space. Additionally, for global support, I mentioned we have 45 offices, I'm sorry, 70 offices across 45 countries. So what that means for me is if I'm working with a potential client, across Europe or Asia, I have the support of a team that really has that localization. So that's a little bit about where I am and what I'm doing.
And why did you leave the startup world?
Oh my goodness.
What?
Well,
Because I mean, you
I
spent quite some time in it,
absolutely,
right?
the first startup that I was in it for 5 years. And when I joined within the first year, I said, "What did I do? Why did I do this? I'll never do it again." And then over time, after really building that business, getting that business out of the red and into the black, building it to, multi-millions, I can honestly say that that was one of the most rewarding experiences of my life. So I truly enjoyed continuing in that vein in the startup world. I've learned a lot over the last 10 years. I've worked within now 4 startups, and one being 5 years, one being 3, and the others being 2. I've seen 2 that were successful. I've seen 2 that were less than successful. They weren't failures, but what I'll say is that I've never worked so hard in my life than when I work in a startup. And that's actually why I left. I realized over the last year before joining Boyden that I was no longer prioritizing myself, and I was really prioritizing the work that I was doing. And I had to take a step back, and I had to reflect on, the importance of me. And what I realized during that reflection was that being sort of fulfilled doesn't necessarily come from the work that you're doing. There's a lot of like inner fulfillment that you need to do as well. And I think I recognize that I really needed more of infrastructure, more support than what a startup could offer me. And that's why I made the move out of the startup world and into Boyden.
And if I remember well, you're married, right?
Yes,
So
I am.
is your husband also, or was he also involved in the startup world, or had he have his own business, or is he also working for companies? How did that work? How did that connect?
We are very much entrepreneurs through and through. He is an entrepreneur in his own right, and we've actually even begun a business together since marrying. I was married for 10 years before him, divorced for a few years before meeting my now husband. We met in 2019, or I'm sorry, we met in 2018 and married in 2019. And since then, he's continued in the business that he had when I came into the marriage, and then we've started another one, which is a mobile barbecue business. We do events and catering and food in barbecue, and he is an amazing chef.
And how do you two work together in that business? Because I mean, very often we have on the Get More, we have people who are their own business owner, and their partner is not part of the business.
Oh,
So it's
yeah.
interesting to see both of you are in that business. So how do you manage to make it work?
Yeah. In that business, we work side by side. We have been sort of letting his other business go and kind of winding that down. That was, a landscape business, and so that has helped free up some time for him. But in the early days, I would say that I was really deeply involved in the business development and getting the business off the ground, finding events, finding potential clients that we could cater to, finding businesses that we could do, services within their business. And I've been doing all of the back office sort of finance, accounting, and also working in the business on the weekends. Most of our events are on the weekends. Occasionally we have, weeknight events and things like that, but we're working together. I'm essentially the service and he is the chef at those events. So yeah, it is a business that I am deeply connected to, I would say 50-50. And there are moments when I've said that I don't know why we did this. There's also really rewarding times too. And I do believe that he is living out what he's called to do, which is truly, cooking and creating sort of innovative recipes and things like that. He's found his calling in that. We have started to look at, bringing some help in for like the weekend events, which has freed me up a little bit.
Okay, so back to what you are doing. Why are you
Yes.
doing? Why are you doing what you are doing? Why are
For
you
me,
so deeply hooked with recruitment, with finding people?
going back to the calling, mentioning that that was his calling, I knew early on that this was my calling when I sort of fell into the space. I absolutely love to be at the service of people. And when you're in this space, you're able to affect people in a very deep way. These are people's livelihoods, these are people's careers. I'm able to give people advice on how to, better themselves, better their resume, better their board bios. I'm able to make connections for them. I think at the heart of everything that I do, it's about being a connector.
Okay.
more than anything else, and I really enjoy it.
Okay. And as you say, you are helping people to move on and to change the, well, to improve their resumes and so on and so forth. Did you have the situation? So that's more me being curiously, situation where you told someone that it's not where they should go. It's not that they aren't on the right path. Are you a VP of marketing who should have been an accountant or something like that? So did that happen? Did that extreme situation or something like that happen?
Yes, I can say, because I started in the space back in 2003, I have seen so many economic shifts. I've seen so many market shifts. I was in this space during the downturn of the economy in 2008. And so, during that time, I had so many people come to me for advice. How do I change the trajectory of my career? Or how do I maybe look at, taking the experience that I have and shifting it to another focus. So, for instance, early on, I was working with designers, and maybe, one of the things that we recognized was that they didn't love design, and that wasn't really their passion, and that, the creativity wasn't flowing. And so one of the areas that I could help potentially point them in another direction is looking at, maybe project management for design, or looking at potentially, advertising management coordination, that sort of thing, rather than design. So, there have been those times where I've helped people shift and helped people transition from one career trajectory to another. At the executive level, it's much more rare, because once you get to that point where you're at the sort of director and VP level, your trajectory is typically on a certain path. But I will say that there have been times when people have come to me where they have moved internally within their organization, and they are at the VP level, and potentially they've moved to a team within their organization that isn't what they thought it would be and isn't what they expected it to be. They thought they might like this particular area of marketing and realized they didn't, or thought that they might like this particular area of, technology or whatever the case may be, and it's not what they thought it was. And helping them sort of course correct and get back on the path of what their career should be is definitely a part of that.
And how does it make you feel when someone finds the right position and there is a perfect match? I guess that doesn't that of course there is a match each time you find someone the right position, but sometimes it clicks better than other times, right? So I guess it has to be a special feeling, right?
It's a great feeling. Outside of being a connector and just having that deep sense of pride because you were able to connect someone to the right opportunity, there is a bit of an adrenaline that you receive when you help make a connection between a company and an employer, an employee and a company. I've always said that, being in the executive search and being in the recruiting field, we are somewhat adrenaline junkies. And it's similar to any sort of business development field. I think people that are in sales oriented roles, they have that same sort of adrenaline rush when you make that connection, whatever that is. If it's, connecting an enterprise to your software, in my case, connecting an enterprise to, their next CEO, that is a huge accomplishment, and you feel a certain sense of an adrenaline rush and pride that comes with that.
Nice,
And
nice.
it keeps you motivated. It really
Yeah.
keeps you motivated because in this business, we have extreme highs and extreme lows. The
Okay.
lows are very low. As I mentioned to you, when the market shifts, you are looking at ways that you can adapt to those market shifts. And, it's sort of this constant evolution of who we are in our business. And sometimes that comes with really steep lows. But the highs and the feelings that you get when you have those highs outweigh the lows. So you're able to just keep going and remembering what that
Yeah.
feeling is until you get that feeling again. Kind of like what like I guess the dopamine that you receive in your brain and endorphins and things like that.
Exactly, yeah.
It's, that's what we have.
And I guess that that's not that much the level of the high executives you are recruiting at the moment, because I guess they all have a very a specific age. I guess I would say around the 40s, 50s. So part of my generation.
It's interesting because definitely I'd say, typically you're kind of in that range. But as it relates to the clients that I support, interestingly
Yeah.
enough, oftentimes in what I've seen, especially since like COVID, you've got founders that you may be working with who founded really great businesses that are thriving and that are driving revenue. And those founders could be in their early 30s,
Right.
sometimes even late 20s,
Yeah.
which is a really interesting shift that I feel it occurred around the time of COVID, where
Okay.
more and more innovators were coming into the market and the market was shifting. So
Interesting.
while at the executive level, let's say director plus, you could be seeing that like late 30s to 50s. Founders could really be at any age in this market.
And how do you see the expectation of each age group? Because I mean, everyone talks about, the millennials, Gen Z, Gen X, and so on and so forth. So
Yeah.
how does it work, for example, when you have a young founder in a company that's running well, who hires
Yes.
someone that's coming from a generation before, who has a very
Yes.
different way of thinking
Yeah. Yeah.
of thinking?
Right. And we see that a lot. We see that a lot in businesses when they get to a certain revenue range, especially if those businesses are, private equity backed, they're looking at bringing in a complementary leader or a level up leader to the founder. So they might have to bring in a new CEO or a new president, or maybe they're bringing in, a first VP of ops or VP of finance or CFO or COO. And typically, when they're bringing in that person is going to be of a likely a different generation from some of these early stage founders. And so that can pose a certain set of unique challenges, depending on the leader. And then also depending on how the opportunity is positioned. I think that most challenges in hiring come from some sort of communication breakdown or miscommunication. And as long as you are presenting the opportunity and the leadership as it truly is, then you can set that next leader up for success. But if you are giving them a picture of something that it's not, and sometimes we do see that in founders, like there's a sense of like these rose-colored glasses, and they, think that the business is something that it's not. And they don't mean to be elusive, and they don't mean to not provide the entire truth. But if that happens, then sometimes you see that those leaders do fail because they haven't been presented with the truth of what the opportunity is and the
Right,
truth of
right.
what the leader is. So I think it's just a matter of ensuring that on the front end, everyone has the right information and the right alignment, and that they're moving towards the right goal, the same goals and the right goals. And so a big part of what we do is ensure that there's alignment across the investors, across the founders, and then across the potential new leadership as we're bringing that person in. If we do that, then we can see success. No matter what the generational gaps are.
And would you say that usually you have to scout to find those talents, or do they naturally come to you? Or do you have to grab them from somewhere to put them somewhere else?
Yeah, we have a really deep network just because this is what we do day in and day out. However, there are many challenges that require us to go out into the market too. I'd say it's probably maybe, I don't know, 60, 40, right? 60% of the people come from our network, and 40% we may have to go out and really seek. And typically the reason for that is because there is something specific that they're looking for that may not be fulfilled within the network. We usually are looking for someone who is working, or maybe, in some cases they're in the process of some sort of exit, could be a sale, or could be an acquisition or an IPO. And then at that point, they're in the process of rolling out of that business, and we can bring them in. It just really depends on the circumstance.
And how is the value of an entrepreneur, of a solopreneur, because they are somewhere listening to this, how are those people perceived? If they want to say, they say, okay, I screwed it up, it's not working, or I'm not generating enough for my family, now it's time that I get a job again. I mean, everything is a job, but you understand what I mean. So
I think it
what
varies.
chances do they have?
It varies based on the other experiences surrounding like the solopreneur and the entrepreneur. I think that if they're, I don't think that people look at entrepreneurs based on a like success and failure, methodology. Yes,
You should come live in France.
entrepreneurs who have been successful are more desired in the market
Of
by
course.
the standards of success. Like, for instance, if they, built a business to 150 or 250 million and sold it, that is going to be highly regarded. However, there are some cases where you've got executives who they spent many years in a large enterprise, building their career, and then they went the solopreneur and entrepreneur route. And, just because that business didn't reach an outcome of, financial success per se, that doesn't mean that they wouldn't be desired in the market, because oftentimes, if you move from, a substantial size business into a business as an entrepreneur, and you're able to build something, some level of measurable success, whatever that looks like, you're still desired in the market. I think that it's a little bit harder for someone who goes into the market and is only an entrepreneur and starts out as that, than trying to go move into, mainstream like corporate America. That's a different, it's a different animal in and of itself. And I wouldn't even suggest it. I wouldn't suggest someone doing that. I would say, probably if you want to do that, maybe go into like the mid-market or go into another high growth business and do that rather than going into a large enterprise after being an entrepreneur. Now, I think the other thing that you asked me, and I wanted to touch on this too, because you were talking about sort of the generational challenges, talking about that at the executive level. But I think it's important to note that I've found through this business that one of the shifts that we saw recently in the market from a generational standpoint is the hybrid versus remote versus
Yeah,
in
oh yeah,
office.
right.
And so I will say that there is a lean from a generation standpoint towards people who aren't willing to fully go into office, versus, those who've been in the workforce for a long time who are, they started that way and are willing to kind of go back into the office. Many people who've just started in the workforce are not looking for that. And so businesses have really had to shift and adapt and shape their learning and development, shape their onboarding, shape their training so
Right.
that they can better, formulate a business that works for the up and coming generations. And leaders have been responsible for doing that in those businesses. And for the most part, I think, they've been doing a really good job.
Okay, good. Well, that's good
Yeah.
news. Yeah, thanks so much for all this information.
Yeah.
Where
Yeah.
can people find you if they want to talk more with you, if they want to ask for
Yeah.
your help? Both, I mean, both on the recruiting side and the barbecue side.
Yes. I am always happy to connect. I'm happy to connect with anyone, whether they have questions for themselves or if they have someone that they know in the market, maybe looking. I am also happy to give advice to anyone who's, new to the workforce coming out of universities, just really there to support in any way I can. And so that's at rtaylor@boyden.com. And then I'm also on LinkedIn, Rhonda Taylor at Boyden, and happy to connect there as well. Always happy to meet face to face via Zoom with anyone. And then on the barbecue side of the business,
That's important.
that's here in Orlando, Florida. So that is at MRBLBBQ. So that's Marble Barbecue. And that's on Instagram, on Facebook. And I'm always happy to connect on LinkedIn there too.
Okay, super cool. So do you
Yeah.
have some deep thoughts, insights, or takeaway for the auditors for today?
Takeaways are that being an entrepreneur, being a person in the startup world is not for the faint at heart. I think it takes a lot of diligence, it takes a lot of persistence, a lot of drive. But I think at the core of what you can take away is if the desire is there and you receive that sort of deep level of enjoyment and fulfillment that you get for the wins in the highs, and you come out of the lows and you're like, I'm going to continue to do this. I say, keep going through the lows, keep going through. And it's okay to continue to reinvent who you are. I think that's another takeaway from this. You can continue to reinvent yourself as a professional, as an entrepreneur, and just as a person overall.
Super nice. Thank you so much, Rhonda, for your
Yeah.
time, for having me on the Get More. And I hope many people will get in touch with you because you definitely have a lot of things to share. So thanks a
Thank
lot.
you. Me too. This was great. It's so good to connect with you again, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.